few moments. But first, I'd like to set the stage for our discussion with an example of how federalism can go wrong by looking at the history of the Federal Reserve System. Now, I'm sure there are many in this room who would say that the Fed was a mistake from the very first day that it was proposed by the Aldrich Commission to in response to the fiscal panic of 1907. And you may very well be right. The United States had been without a central bank since January 1836, when Andrew Jackson, in a fit of populist pique, refused to support renewal of the charter of the Second Bank of the United States. From then until the Civil War, the United States banking system consisted of state-chartered banks, where money consisted of silver and gold coin, and state banknotes that were issued by the state banks. And each state had their own sort of set of regulations, some of which were modestly good and others not, rather loose. So the money system was interesting, shall we say. In 1863, with one of its aims to emasculate the state banking system, the National Banking Act was passed, establishing nationally chartered banks and that circulated national banknotes. The act established a 10% tax on transactions where state bank notes were used as a means of payment. As you might expect, the 10% tax led to the demise of state banknotes. But, as usually has been the case in America, the ingenuity of the state bankers led to the common use of checks that were not subject to the tax. And the state banking system continued to thrive in spite of Congress's attempt to bury it. It is certainly true that the banking system in the post-Civil War period was extraordinarily risky, leading to a series of failures and panics, but which were all followed by a very robust economic recovery. If you're looking for an example of American exceptionalism, you couldn't do much better than looking at America in the post-Civil War economic expansion, most especially the settling of the West. Would this phenomenon have been as robust, or would it even have occurred if Washington had been running the central bank? That's a very interesting question. As America entered the 20th century, the pressure for the central bank continued to grow, and in the wake of the panic of 1907, it became irresistible. Federal Reserve System was the result. While there was enormous pressure for a central bank, there was also considerable resistance based on the continuing lack of trust on the part of the public of central authority in Washington, especially when it came to money. As a result, the Federal Reserve System, as it was originally enacted, was a very decentralized organization consisting of 12 independent district banks headquartered in 12 cities across the nation. These banks were and are owned by the shareholders, who are the banks themselves, the member banks of each of the 12 Federal Reserve District banks. A nine-member board of directors governs the district, where a majority of the board is chosen by the member banks themselves. So the member banks control essentially the majority of the board. Each of these 12 district banks was run independently according to the decisions made by the particular Federal Reserve Bank directors. As we have seen throughout the 20th century, the inexorable slide toward more and more central control in Washington has been felt at the Fed through the gradual diminishing of the role of the 12 independent regional banks and their influence being replaced by the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Open Market Committee, which is controlled by the board. The Open Market Committee is itself an example of how power moved from the regional banks to Washington. The Open Market Committee, which has become the instrument for establishing monetary policy, was originally a voluntary association of the regional banks designed to better coordinate the activities of the of the regional banks to avoid volatility in the markets. During the Depression, Congress formalized the committee, leading to the control of monetary policy by the majority vote of the Federal Reserve Board. Thus, the Federal Reserve system is a textbook example of the slippery slope that shifts local authority to Washington, as was feared by much of the public at the time of the establishment of the Fed, and in spite of the safeguards that were established to try to prevent it. So how has the Fed performed as it has assumed more and more authority? We learned from Milton Friedman how unsuccessful the Fed was in attempting to spark a recovery during the Great Depression. Because they did not fully understand the implications of the powers they were exercising, not only did they not help the situation, they actually contributed to the lengthening and deepening of the Depression. Following World War II, the monetary policy model of using interest rates to influence economic activity instead of monetary aggregates, i.e. the money supply, led to the destabilization rather than to a stable economic growth. It was not until Friedman's ideas finally pierced the orthodoxy of the Fed that the Open Market Committee adopted money supply growth as the control mechanism that the economy prospered through the Volcker years. In more recent years, the Fed has reverted to its old ways and has been a major player in the current economic upheaval. As a reward, it has been provided with even more power through the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act and the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. All the more reason to fear for our future.